Man, I analogize it to like when we exercise, particularly strength training, the whole point of strength training is to tear down the muscle tissue in order to build it back up. That's how that works. Our own cell systems work in a similar way. When they break down, if you will, you know, that's not necessarily the common language, but when they multiply out, they're recreating and they're actually growing when they do that. And to me, that's the benefit that doubt can offer, is this whole sense of sort of tearing down in order to build up.
You just heard the voice of Reverend Daniel Humbert, senior pastor out of Treach Memorial United Methodist Church in Flower Mound, Texas. Thanks for listening to the Life Plus God podcast. My name is Alyssa Robinson. I'm your host. And you just caught a clip of us wrestling with the question, what should we do with our doubts about God? And one of the things I love about this podcast is we ask the questions that people are afraid to ask, maybe in the church setting or in their even in their small group setting, maybe even with their family. And I think one of the hardest things for people to admit is I'm having doubts, either about my faith or the nature of God, or does God even exist? And it's scary to admit that in community. So I think in this episode today, we're just gonna, you know, straight up admit we have doubts.
Come on.
Doubts exist and it's normal and it's natural. What do we do with them? How do we process them? So Daniel, to kick us off, I'd really just love to hear from you. What were you raised to believe about doubting God? Because I think a lot of this mentality we have about doubt stems from our childhood.
Yeah, I imagine it probably does. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't know that I thought much about that particular question in terms of how I was taught or raised. But I imagine, because I believe in curiosity, and I think the thing that my parents and I think my teachers by sort of default was that curiosity is a good thing. And I sort of relate curiosity to doubt. That is to say, I question things. I want to know why. I want to know how. And sometimes that can either lead to doubt or kind of pull you out of doubt, right? Just depending. But the curiosity, I think, became helpful. And I tease about my teachers, because I was that kid who always asked why in class. And many of my teachers really got agitated by the why question. Why are we doing this? And why is this happening? And, you know, I just wanted to know. And I think it's that curiosity that kind of drives for me the willingness to ask questions that maybe other people might not ask, particularly as it comes to faith.
Yeah. When I think about my childhood, I mean, I was raised in the United Methodist Church, which is not afraid of questions.
Right.
But I wouldn't say doubting was encouraged. I wasn't told that it was wrong to doubt, but when I think about my Sunday school teachers, because believe it or not, I was also a questioner. I asked a lot of questions, and a lot of times my doubts were dismissed. And so I think, looking at it as an adult, it's because they didn't have the answers and they didn't know how to have a conversation with a 7-year-old about something that there are no easy answers. And so usually the answer was, well, you know, that's something God only knows, or that's, you know, that we're not meant to have all of the answers, or that's where faith comes in, or things like that. And so to me, it didn't feel like genuine answers. It felt like, you know, let's not talk about that right now, Alyssa.
Yeah. And I, you know, let's be honest, Alyssa, you were unique and are unique, right? And so I think there are times when answers like that for kids can be appropriate, right? Because what we all just refer to as age appropriate, right? So depending on what the story was or the concern or the doubt, you wanted more. You wanted more information. And, I'm going to defend your teachers just a little bit, your Sunday school teachers, because who knows?
But well, and there are plenty of kids for them when they're like, you know, that's where faith come in. The kid would just be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
But for me, I was like, no.
Right. I want more.
Tell me more.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I think you're right. I think United Methodism, while it may not encourage doubt, obviously, it allows for it. It allows for the possibility that people may struggle or may not understand, and that's all right. I mean, I teach Bible study, for instance, and every year I say we need and want a safe environment. And a part of what a safe environment means is when I have questions or I have doubts or I have wonderings about, well, how could that work? This is going to be a safe place to ask those questions. And there might not always be answers, but this is going to be a safe place for that to happen.
Yeah. And I'm fully, so it sounds like we had a similar upbringing in terms of approaching doubt. And we have the same beliefs now about doubt of like, we should make a safe space and this is okay. I would venture to guess there's a lot of people listening who they were taught it is not okay to doubt. And that doubting God is a weakness,
yeah,
or it's a sin or a shortfall, you know, of faith. And that's a really tough thing to overcome.
It is, and unfortunately, when we create that environment where you know literally the doubt is shut down or the questioning is you know poo-pooed, it creates in any individual the realization, well, I guess it's not right to ask that, or I shouldn't ask that, or I shouldn't think that. And that really does shut down faith development, right? It's like saying to a kid, you can't ever do that, when in fact it may not be appropriate right now in the moment, but there may be times when that action or behavior could be appropriate, right? Talking back to an adult, right? Well, there could be times where that's real appropriate if safety's involved or whatever, right? So when we condition people to say doubt, concern, questioning is never right, it's not helpful. Mm.
So how do you personally approach doubts when they arise in your faith journey? Do you experience doubts?
Yeah, so I can't say that I've ever had a doubt so much as, again, this curiosity concept of just, well, how did that work? How could that possibly have been, right? And so for me, I don't call that doubt, but I do call it clearly curiosity and this desire to want to know more or to try to figure it out or to try to wonder, I wonder what was God thinking with that, or how did that come to be, right? And so for me, it's always about asking questions. It's about discerning any form of response, whether from God or from other people. It's a way to say, okay, I want to try to figure this out, because again, that's just kind of the way I was raised, was let's try to figure this out. And if there's no real clear answer, then I personally am good with that. I'm all right with no clarity. I'd prefer clarity, but if there's not clarity, then I'm kind of like, you know what? If I've tried to figure it out, if I've tried to get some clarity and I just can't find clarity, personally, I'm all right to just move on. And that's just kind of the way I work. But I know that's not true for everybody, right?
Well, what would you consider a doubt? If you're like, you know, I'm not really a doubter, I'm more of a questioner or curious, like, where's the line to doubting?
Yeah, I guess that's a great question. I guess for me, doubting would be, so if I doubt that, then that means I don't trust that it could have been possible. I don't believe that there's any way that that's real. And the doubt portion kind of hangs or hovers with me. That's how I would define it. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly been at those places where I didn't understand and it didn't make sense. And golly, I don't know how that worked. So I guess there's doubt there, but for me, the way I dealt with that doubt was to ask questions of curiosity.
Yeah. I think a lot of times my doubts come in when it comes to the construct of religion and how I am, what messaging am I receiving and how intensely researched was that messaging. And I think of it like, man, I doubt the Bible constantly. I know that that's not, you know, a popular opinion among Christian folks, but I really struggle with the Bible as a book. And it is that trust of like, okay, who was putting this together? What were their intentions? And specifically with interpretations, when I read about, you know, how things have been misinterpreted or, you know, everybody has their biases and their agenda. And when this word was changed to that word, what was the intention behind it?
Right.
Those are the things that, and then if someone is preaching at me from one of those texts that I have researched and found, you know, maybe that's not true to the original intent.
Yeah.
Then I wonder, how much research have you done before you got up at this pulpit claiming to have the answers?
So then that exasperates the doubt, right?
Yes. I'm like, man, you're up here preaching the word of God and you don't seem to have done the same level of research as I have. You know, that's so judgmental. It's ridiculously judgmental. And I know that, and I know that's something I have to work on, but
sometimes I'm glad you're not sitting in our pew anymore.
I know. You're like, you keep going to that other church. But that's where my doubts come in, and my trust is the human piece the element.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's how I really appreciate you bringing that up. I think that's where basically I kind of, what am I trying to say? That's where I kind of find benefit in not dwelling in the doubt or not necessarily needing an answer, if you will, to whatever's being presented, because I know the human element is real, right? And the ways in which we present either a message or a teaching or a document can be very humanly created, right? And so if I'm doubting what a presenter's offering, I acknowledge for my own self, hey, that's this person's either weakness, frailty, inability, incapacity, whatever, versus what either may be actually there in the text or how I render the text, right? So.
Mm. Well, let's get into some specifics. I'm sure you've had a lot of people knocking on your door as a pastor with their fair share of doubts. Mm. What are some of the most common doubts that you've heard about God or God's nature? And it can be specific or it can be thematic.
Yeah, it's funny because I have to own that over the years, I've not had huge amounts of folks coming with doubts. There certainly are. And they come up most oftenly in Bible studies. And they're more about what the text is describing, things like the miracles of Jesus or the healings that are performed. How could that possibly be? And how could that work? And why don't we see that more commonly today? And those are some of the more general. Some of the more sort of big ticket items would be, well, how could virgin birth be real, right? Or how could the resurrection be real, right? Because they seem superhuman, right? They seem beyond the norm and typical. So that would be another set. So some are sort of about events or occurrences. Some are about what we would call theology, right? Virgin birth or resurrection. Others then go to, I guess, big ticket items like, if God is a loving God, why does war exist? Or if God is a loving God, why does suffering exist? And anytime you get into those, you know, golly, huge ticket items like suffering or war, I personally go to the human element. Well, human element is what creates war, not God, right? Human element is what can create suffering, mm-hmm. Not God. And so so that's kind of where I go down the road with folks about the nature of God if we're talking about suffering or if we're talking about war.
How do you respond to illness? Because that is something that people could say, you know, God invented or created the bacteria that is causing mass illness and sickness and deaths and cancer and all of these things.
Yeah.
Is that from God?
Yeah. So I talk what I call theological talk, and theological talk said, rather than scientific or medical or even sociological, theological talk says we live in a broken world, and in a broken world, there are going to be elements of the world that are broken, i.e. these viruses or these bacteria or these things. Do I believe God creates all things? I believe God created all things, set all things into motion. And then some things, you know, come out of either evolution or come out of metamorphosis of things that already existed. Is God's hand in all that? I think God's hand is in all that, but God's not sort of what I call responsible for all of that, because some of that is literally humanly created, viruses and bacteria.
Yeah. Going back to some of the specifics, you know, with the the virgin birth and the resurrection, that's where I get into like a research hole, you know, of, because I'm curious about those things too. And I think a lot of it comes down to whether you're wrestling with it or not, is whether you're a literalist or a metaphorical or some mix of both. Because when you look through the history of religion, not just Christianity, all religion and all spirituality, virginity and resurrection are mythological themes that come up over and over and over again that are a representation of new life and wholeness, being at one with your creator, which is the Christian message of like this new life, this oneness. We are trying to reunite with God, but it's not new. It's not anything that's uniquely Christian. And there are some things that are, but that's where I'm like, it kind of puts a magnifying glass on these doubts that I have of like the history of what we believe, and even like the history of Easter and Easter being a pagan holiday. And I'm telling you, it is endless, endless research for me. And it's something that's really exciting for me, but then it can also make my fundamental Christian beliefs that I grew up with feel distant.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the research is always helpful. I know in our day and age, research can, number one, take you down rabbit trails, quite literally, and or become overwhelming. But I say all the better to do research and to try to help satisfy that inner desire, because I make up a part of your desire to do all the research is to know more and to try to figure out, is there a solution, if you will, my words, to this doubt, right? To this query of how could that be, or how did that work, right? I think that's important. And again, I just think it's important to say to folks, these questions and these doubts are a better part of faith development. And so I would argue that your faith is becoming stronger, maybe not in the way you think of it as stronger, but as you do more research, I think you're determining and finding out whether this stuff makes more sense to you or not, whether it has value for you or not. Because ultimately, that's what religion is. Spirituality is about value, right? Do I believe it adds value to my life? Do I believe it has purpose for my life? And I think if we're all honest, we're all going to have some forms of either questioning / curiosity and or doubt about our chosen faith, right? Because I hope anybody who claims a faith, whether the faith of Christ or not, is doing it by choice, not by, you know, inculcation. Though I know for a fact with regard to Christianity, and therefore I can only assume for other faith traditions, that it is, you know, cultural inculcation, right? It's just this whole sense in which this is what I grew up with.
This is my community.
Right. Yeah. So I just accept it.
Yeah, I think that doubt as an exercise for me, yes, part of it is seeking clarity. What I'm not trying to do is disprove anything. I'm not trying, which I think is the perception a lot of times of like, if you're doubting, you're trying to poke holes, which I am, but it's not to the detriment of anyone. What I understand is that we are each just seeing a glimpse of who God is in our faith practice. Yeah. Like the scripture is not the whole picture. It's a glimpse of who God is and God's character. And so we're seeing these little glimpses of God. And so what I think is like, okay, the practice of Christianity is a puzzle piece in who God is. And as I'm trying to explore other faith traditions, other spiritual practices, where these traditions that we do, the Easter egg hunt came from, you know, all of these things, that's where I'm like, okay, what I'm trying to figure out is who is God? Like, who is this person?
Yeah.
Not person, but
entity. And so I think that's where, oftentimes, and this is interesting to me as a pastor, that people, at least for me personally, have rarely come to me talking about the nature of God or how God sort of works, if you will. It happens occasionally, but it's not like all the time. It's more about what do our scriptures say and how could they possibly be, how could that possibly have been real or have happened or whatever. So it's interesting you put it that way, because it is interesting when you go back to other faith traditions. We've talked about this before, that, you know, there are some commonalities among many of the major world religions, right? And whether that's what we would refer to as a golden rule, or whether it's even components, right, of prayer or justice or love or things of that nature that you find common among all the religions. And then you kind of begin to wonder, well, golly, that must mean that that somehow there is this greater power, or, you know, God that must have had some kind of input into all this, right? Because there are a whole bunch of commonalities among these major religions. Now, of course, there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of religions, but of the major ones that we could all sort of identify, there's some real common ground.
I see doubt almost as a spiritual practice, like a spiritual endeavor.
Yeah.
And it's like exercising. It's like going to the gym. It ignites creativity within me. It makes me wonder. But part of my experience and journey is that I do believe in a higher power. Mm. I do believe in God. And it's just constantly unfolding to me what that means and how God presents God's self in the world, and how we're all connected. And it's just an ongoing evolution of faith, and my doubts are a huge part of that.
Yeah. And so I agree with that, because I think this is where, you know, going back to some of your original questions about golly, some people must have been raised without the opportunity to live into doubt, whereas some others were given the opportunity to doubt. Man, I analogize it to, like, when we exercise, particularly strength training. The whole point of strength training is to tear down the muscle tissue in order to build it back up. That's how that works. Our own cell systems work in a similar way. When they break down, if you will, you know, that's not necessarily the common language, but when they multiply out, they're recreating and they're actually growing when they do that. And to me, that's the benefit that doubt can offer, is this whole sense of sort of tearing down in order to build up. That's the deconstruction concept. Now, deconstruction does not necessarily mean doubt, but it certainly can have doubt as a part of it. And the doubt, when channeled well, I think, can offer, like you say, the curiosity and the component of, golly, I want to know more, even in the midst of my doubt, right? As I, in your case, as I do more research, or as I kind of look into more things, it actually creates an excitement about the faith itself, right? And so that's the good thing. I mean, I have to own, I wouldn't want anybody to what I refer to as hang out and wallow in doubt, but I do think that doubt can be very positive, very constructive, and very beneficial to somebody's faith development when you give yourself permission and others give you permission to ask those questions, to muse and wonder about those things. I believe it can help create a deeper, richer faith that may change and morph from where you were previously. By golly, if in fact we're believers in Christ and we believe in the resurrection, then we know that God is a worker of new things and makes things possible that we might not otherwise have thought possible, right? So yeah. That's why in our life groups here at Treach, and most of our Bible studies, at least certainly the ones I do and many of the leaders I know of, create environments where it's safe to ask those questions and to doubt aloud. Oh, I don't believe that, or I don't understand that, or that doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that is happening in those groups. It was a little surprising to me to hear that you don't have a lot of people come to you about who want to talk about the nature of God. That's all I ever want to talk about is the nature of God. But then it made sense to me of, like, you know, they're more curious about what does the Bible say about this and what does this mean? And I think where I am in my doubting journey and maybe my deconstruction journey is I'm not really turning to the Bible for answers right now. Because to me, that is just as much of a area of doubt as anywhere else. And so I think a lot of our doubts can also stem from, what do we believe about the Bible, and do we find comfort and answers in that text, or does it create more turmoil and discontent for us because we're not sure where it came from and what it means?
Sure. And I understand that. And again, a part of that is giving people permission to have those questions and doubts, because it's going to be both my nature in terms of who I am as a human, but also as a pastor, to try to help move people from that doubt into some greater sense of either assurance or faith that says, for me in particular, I would say, a part of faith is saying, I don't necessarily have to understand it. I need to begin to get to some form of trust to believe that somehow it could be true, even if I don't have answers about how it can be true. That doesn't work for everybody. It works for me and it works for some, but that's what I want to help people try to find some form of resolution in the midst of that doubt is there a way, for instance, for me to trust that this could either be true without necessarily being factual, or could it be that I can try to understand it without fully understanding it? That is to say, is it possible that miracles can happen when I don't have a clue how that really works? Or is it possible that someone can be healed in a non-scientific way without any kind of medicine or doctors facilitating? Can I trust that that can happen? I trust that that can happen. I don't always see it, right? I don't always witness it in my own life, but I believe that it's possible.
What are some of the myths we need to bust about the danger of doubting? Because for some people, this is a scary territory that it's a no-go zone.
Well, I think the first myth we've already talked about, which is that it's wrong to doubt. I think we need to bust that myth, right? That it, in other words, it's not helpful. It's not helpful to just live in that sort of reality. It's better to say, you know what, I doubt this and I'm unclear about this and I want to know more, or some other way forward. I certainly would say we need to bust the myth that it's improper to ask questions about how things work in either the Bible or about God. I think questions are helpful. Curiosity in and of itself is a very beneficial thing, both for one's intellect and for one's heart. And the faith of Christ, at least, is based in both of those things, based in my understanding of knowledge, but also based in my heart sense of what is my heart telling me, or how does my discernment, if you will, help me to better connect with God? Curiosity helps that, right? So bust the myth that we can't ask questions. We can't. And look, as American culture and really many other cultures become less and less Christianized, there's going to be lots of questions. I mean, lots of questions. I just this past Easter, I had a bunch of questions. Of why does the date of Easter change? That's a great question, right? And it has nothing to do with the date in which Jesus was raised from the dead, right? It has absolutely nothing to do with that. At least in the Protestant/Catholic Church. In the Orthodox Church, they have a little more religious connection with it, right? As it's tied to Passover.
One of the ones for me that we've already kind of unpacked, but I just want to hit head on, a myth to bust is that doubt is not the opposite of faith. And I think that that's sometimes the mentality that we have. If you're doubting, you're not trusting. Yeah. If you're doubting, you're lacking in faith. And I think a really great analogy you used was, you know, when we go to the gym to exercise, we're tearing down those muscles to build them back stronger. And that is doubt to our faith. It to me personally, it is a tool to enrich and to become even more intimate with my Creator.
Yeah. I believe that wholeheartedly. I just think that's the beauty of how doubt can work. Now, it doesn't always work that way, right? Because for some, doubt will eventually lead them to either leave faith or never accept faith. But doubt can actually lead both to faith or to a stronger faith. It just depends on how we want to process it and deal with it, right? So one of my favorite passages on this topic is the man, I think it's in Mark chapter 9, the man who Jesus comes to kind of heal his daughter. And the man, you know, Jesus and he are having a brief conversation about faith. And the man says to him, "I believe, help my unbelief." And to me, that's, number one, an acknowledgement that doubt exists. Number two, it's an acknowledgement that it can exist literally in Jesus's presence. The guy's acknowledging it. But it's also saying, I have these doubts. I want some help. I want to try to figure something out. And and Jesus is very gracious about it, right? It's not like he goes, well, who are you and why have you even called me here if you have all these doubts and why would you have all that, right? There weren't a bunch of questions and a bunch of condemnations. It was, I'm here and I'll try to help. But those weren't the words of Jesus, but I mean, that's what was intimated. And I just love that because it acknowledges that it's real.
Is there, there are a lot of experiences with Jesus specifically of people doubting in his presence. Mm. And he responds with such kindness and generosity of spirit of just continuing the conversation with them. You know, all of these, and even with like Pharisees and lawyers who we know they're asking questions to try and trip him up. They don't have pure intentions. He still responds genuinely and authentically and doesn't just write people off when they're expressing those doubts. And I love all of those stories. How do we reconcile that understanding of doubt with maybe the Old Testament version of God? Not that they're two different gods, but sometimes it feels that way, of the response to doubt from the Israelite people. And I think specifically, I think I said in a note to you, Lot's wife being turned into a pillar of salt when she looked back when, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, clearly one could describe that story for her as doubt, and it certainly is tied to trust or lack thereof. But it's really about, look, this is going to happen, meaning the destruction, and you don't want to be a part of that. So just don't be a part of it. In other words, don't look back and look forward. So, I mean, there's a number of ways you can look at that particular story of what both she is doing and what happens to her. I think in terms of Old Testament stories, two of my favorites that are doubt-ridden is Moses's call story, where he literally puts up excuse after excuse after excuse, basically because he doubts that this is going to work, that God can use him, and that God somehow has a purpose for him. And to me, that's, I mean, literally five different times Moses has five different excuses, and they're all, in my opinion, it's all about doubt. And so, and God gets frustrated. I mean, there's a sense in which God is, you know, kind of ticked off at Moses based on the text, and yet God still uses him. And then you get to another text like Elijah, who has run from Jezebel because he's, you know, killed all her foreign gods, and she's pretty ticked off and she's looking for him. And he goes off and, you know, goes into a cave, and when an angel comes to him, he goes through this litany of, I've done all these things and I've done all the right stuff and I'm the only one left and everybody's out to get me and I don't know how this is going to work. And he does that twice, literally, in a period of about, I don't know, five or six verses in 2 Kings. And that's a great example of doubt. And yet, he has one of the most powerful encounters with God in that cave, even having expressed his doubt and expressed it in very clear and uncertain terms. And so I think sometimes it just depends on the story, because in that case, I think God does deal with Elijah graciously. He sort of, he helps Elijah to witness God's presence and to witness how God can be real, even when you've got huge doubts. Why have I done this? And why am I having to go through all this turmoil when I'm doing it for you, God? I did it for you. And yet,
this is supposed to be a part of your big plan.
yeah. And so, you know, to me, that ends well as well for Elijah. He gets to see and encounter and experience God in a very personal way, and that helps bring assurance to him. So the doubt in this case is dealt with pretty powerfully, but not condescendingly or not in a challenge way that says you shouldn't have this doubt. It was, Let me show you my presence in a way that you really were not prepared to experience it. You know, it goes through the litany of right, a fire and a great hailstorm or windstorm and a earthquake, big ticket items, right, where you kind of think you might experience God. And then it's in this sheer still silence that he experiences God's presence, right? So, you know, that's a long way to answer your question. I think it just depends on the story.
Well, and what I like about those examples is that I think that there is a fear of expressing doubts, not just within community because of fear of judgment, but I've even heard people talk about like privately experiencing doubts. They're afraid that they're going to anger God or that God's going to smite them in some way because they're lacking faith, just to put them in their place.
Yeah.
And that is not the God I know.
Right.
Based on all of these stories, is like God is big enough to handle all of your doubts and frustrations and questioning and dragging of the feet, you know?
Right. And so, and thank you for that, because I think that's the point ultimately, for me at least, in this entire conversation, is God is big enough to handle our doubts. And we just shared a couple of stories, whether in the Old Testament or the New Testament. Just like I think God's big enough in our prayer life, for instance, to handle us being ticked off and angry and name-call God. God's big enough to handle that. God's big enough to handle our depressive moments, right? Or God's big enough to handle anything that we may face, including doubting what may be either in the Scriptures or how we understand God. Because so much of it has to do with our rendering or our understanding of what either that text says or how it has been brought to us. You mentioned earlier in an offline conversation about that, and just an encounter you had in worship where somebody's speaking in a way that, you know, isn't representing God the way you understand God and the way you understand how God's love is eminent both for us living and or us dying, right? So that's a human thing. That's not a God thing. Mm. Yeah.
So once someone gets to the point in their journey that they're willing to say, I have some doubts that I'm wrestling with, how in whatever way they say it, either with a friend or even privately in their prayer time, finally admitting to themselves, yeah, I have these doubts. One of the things that you've mentioned is, you know, the downside of doubt is you can't stay there. You can't wallow in it.
Waller
in it.
Got to say, sorry, that from Texas. We waller.
Sorry. When you get to that point of a willingness to doubt, it can start to feel overwhelming, especially if you get stuck in it. Mm. From your experience, what advice do you offer to people who are wrestling with their doubts of God's existence or nature or Scripture or whatever it is? How do you keep from getting stuck in that area?
Well, I mean, things that I encourage folks to do is keep the dialogue open. If it's with me, great, let's keep talking about this. If it's with other people that you trust or you know, believe in or cherish just the relationship, keep talking with them. That's one thing. Depending on the person, like in your case, I would say, man, keep doing some research. Keep looking into other ways or other understandings and see if it helps guide you or encourage you. And if they are comfortable with prayer, I would certainly invite them to simply pray, ask God for guidance or some insight, and then to listen. That's the hardest part for any of us in our prayer life, is to listen and then to discern. Because I'm a firm believer that God will speak to us somehow, some way. You know, I've never heard God speak verbally like we're talking now. But I've heard God speak in lots of different ways, whether through other people, other circumstances, situations, where things become obvious is an overstatement, but I mean, things sort of rise to the occasion that help me see or discern that maybe this is a response to what I've been trying to find out, right? So I think any of those are helpful, but the biggest part of which is just keep seeking, I guess is my advice. Keep seeking insight that can help address whatever your curiosity or your doubt is.
Well, and you brought up, you know, the experience that I was talking to you about before we started recording, And so my partner and I went to a worship experience a few weeks ago that as the person was preaching, it was just the opposite of my theology in every way possible, to the point that I was just like dumbfounded the things that were coming out of this person's mouth. But what it led to, I don't know if it was God speaking or using this experience, but my partner and I, when we got back in the car at the end of that experience, we both had the same feeling of like, well, that didn't feel right.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were able to have an hours-long conversation about the nature of God, which was extremely impactful to my partner. And he had some new realizations or new understandings about God that he had been really wrestling with for a long time about, like, is God angry at me? Is God disappointed in me? You know, these questions that we all have sometimes. Right. And we were able to work through that, all inspired by what I thought was a horrible experience.
Well, so there you go. So that's the point, right? Is you had a further dialogue, and in a period of roughly an hour, you helped him. I assume he probably helped you a little bit, and just that ongoing dialogue makes all the difference in the world. And guess what? It's in a safe environment, right? Mm-hmm. You guys cherish each other. You trust each other. You're willing to be vulnerable with each other. That's what this takes, is that kind of environment where it's all right to talk through this stuff and say out loud, I don't understand that. That makes no sense to me. And behind all that, I have to own, behind all that, hopefully, is this sense in which I'd like to find some resolution, right? I'd like to find some way forward rather than, as we say, wallow in it or get stuck in it, right? Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I think sometimes for me in my faith reconstruction, because I've been deconstructing a long time and I slowly reconstruct along the way, sometimes it's helpful to hear, well, I know I don't believe that, you know?
Sure,
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing to expose yourself to new ways of thinking, new ways of being, something that's different from my faith tradition. And maybe sometimes I can adopt something positive from that faith tradition. And other times I can walk away and be like, well, that's taught me something that God is not to me.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you've talked a lot about creating a safe space and the importance of that safety with people that you know, you trust, you love. And we talked about it in the form of life groups, meeting one-on-one with the pastor, a friend. For those of us who find ourselves in these conversations, as individuals, how can we make sure that we are a safe space for someone who wants to express doubts to us? How can we prepare? Because my guess is we're all going to come in contact with a conversation like this at one point.
Yeah. Well, so a couple of thoughts. One is never have a pat answer, right? That is to say, never say, well, golly, why would you think that? Or just have faith, right? Those are pat answers. Pat answers don't create safe environments, right? What they create is turmoil, right? And or condemnation. That's the first thing. The second thing is, likewise, ask questions, I would say, out of curiosity. Well, tell me more. That's very open-ended, right? Tell me more about what you're thinking or feeling with regard to this. That does two things. One is it immediately says, I'm interested, tell me more. But it also says, I value you to the degree that I don't want to shut you down. I don't want to turn you off, right? Those are personal ways to create safe environment. Another is to own, if you have it, any real doubt that you may have. Hey, you know, I've often wondered that too, or, and it doesn't have to be on that topic, but just I've often struggled with X, right? That way you own that this is real, that this is a part of what it means to be human. I think all of those are helpful. And then to just say, let's keep this dialogue going, or let's keep this conversation on track, maybe, you know, next week or next month or whatever. I think all of those are helpful tools in personal relationships. I think the worst thing we can do is to make people feel less than when they say, I'm doubting that, or I don't understand that. because it will shut you down, right? I mean, that's the first thing any of us want to do when we have been told that's wrong or unacceptable, or ask the question out loud, how could you think that or not think that, right? All of that shuts stuff down.
Well, and I think one of the things that, you know, when I come to someone with my doubts, first of all, I'm very selective about who I come to with my doubts because not everybody responds well to it. But I think some of the worst responses I've gotten, the person has had the best intentions, but it is when I come with something that I'm very much wrestling with and have been for a long time, and then they come back at me with something of certainty or an exact answer, or, well, you know, the Bible is clear about that, and it says, you know, fill in the blank. That shuts me down instantly. And that's my own baggage of I have doubts about the Bible as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that when you respond to doubts with certainty, I don't know. And I can't say it's a bad thing because some people are just very certain in their faith.
Yeah, I think that's what I meant by pat answer. And I should have said it better. I think you're right. I think certainty in the face of doubt just shuts me. Yeah, it shuts people down. Yeah. Huh.
So maybe don't be so certain. I don't know. Like what?
Well, again, that's where I think the curiosity, because you may not literally have a doubt about that thing about which this person's bringing doubt to you, but to just ask curiosity questions helps them feel safe and for you to develop even a further relationship with them versus, you know, cut and dried certainty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I do like the, you know, hey, well, I haven't struggled with that one, but here's one that I struggle with.
Right.
You know, because I'm guessing you probably have struggled with something at some time, even if it was momentary.
Correct. Right. And to know that somebody else is in that is helpful. Yeah.
Can you share any stories or insights from your pastoral experience where, someone's doubts have strengthened their relationship with God, that, well, there was a happy ending?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll share my own personal story that I would have told you prior to this conversation that it was about me and my doubts in myself, but I think it's literally, or was literally, about my doubts about God's will in my life or God's desire for my life. We've talked about this before, about my experience at Argyle, and I won't go into all those details, but basically I got challenged so much with regard to my being an ordained clergy in the United Methodist Church. I literally had to sit before what I referred to as an inquisition. I had to sit before every member of the church who wanted to come to that particular meeting and ask me any and every theological question imaginable that they may have had of me, having already been ordained, right? And so it was like they were inquiring in the Inquisition for me. And when that was a several-hour process, when it was over, I was in my early 30s, mid-30s, still early on in ministry. I doubted whether I should be in ministry. And what that caused was a doubt of what God had called me to, right? Which is a part of God's nature and a part of what God does, I believe.
This is like an exact reflection of Elijah.
in many ways, yeah. And I literally, for the next many weeks, questioned, golly, am I doing the right thing? Did I answer the right call? What do you want of me, God? Because golly, if this is going to be the rest of ministry, I sure as heck don't want this, right? And so I struggled for weeks about whether I needed to stay in ministry, whether I needed to follow this call that I assumed God had made for me. And I had lots of doubts. Was I qualified? Was I capable? Am I the right person for this? And all of that's in the context of believing that God called me to this, right? That God was asking me to do these very things. And so I'm not even sure what I could tell you helped me move beyond that doubt, but something clearly did, because here I am 20 plus years later. And at some point I realized that kind of atrocity or unpleasant experience, number one, I knew, or I trusted, I should say it this way, I trusted that wasn't going to happen again. And I trusted that whatever I needed to have said or presented was what I believed of God, right? And then I also trusted that God knew what God was doing. You know, that I wasn't a perfect candidate for ministry. I wasn't a perfect person to do all this, but I came to the realization that God could use me no matter what. And so that took doubt in who I was and doubt in who God was calling and God's capacity to work through me to some form of resolution. And it was helpful. It was positive. And while I certainly can't guarantee this, I believe that it was that firing, right? That being in the pit of the fire, if you will, that was clearly unpleasant. I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. It helped make me who I am today, and it helped change the way I respond to that kind of questioning, theological questioning, and how I want to respond to people who have doubts. Because the whole reason I was in the Inquisition was people had doubts about me, right? They had doubts about what God was doing through me. And so I didn't ever want to put people in an Inquisition. I wanted to help people feel safe and cared for, even when we disagree on theological issues, because it was all about theology. It was all about how people render Scripture and understand who's in and who's out, because that's what that whole thing was about. Mm. So,
do you think that that experience, it sounds like it strengthened a lot of your communication, interpersonal skills, you know, all of that. Did it strengthen your faith? Did it?
It certainly strengthened my prayer life, I can assure you that, because I started praying a lot more. But it also strengthened. I guess I would say it strengthened my faith to the degree that I could trust God more, because I believed, once I moved through the doubt, because the doubt was very real. Is it, should I be doing this? Has God made a good choice, right? I mean, all of those things.
Even questioning, was the calling from God, or is it just something I wanted to
do? Yeah, absolutely. So once you came through that firing, if you will, that doubtful essence, and got to the other side, this is why I believe, like I believe you believe, that doubt can be very positive and very constructive and very helpful. I moved through some deep, dark stuff because I'm like, again, I'm almost 30. I think I was 34 years old, I guess. I'm not quite 10 years into the gig, if you will, totally. And I had a decision to make. Am I going to spend the rest of my life doing this, or am I going to go a whole other way that I was not prepared for, right? So, yeah, it strengthened my ability, if you will, to trust God.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that doubt has done for me. You mentioned, you know, changing your relationship with people. Mm. And for me, my doubts have made me a kindred spirit with people who are atheist and agnostic.
Sure.
Not that I'm trying to preach at them in any way. It's actually the exact opposite of she's a safe Christian to be around.
Yeah, right.
And they know that they are loved and cared for, and I'm not going to try and proselytize them. But if they ever want to talk about faith, I'm open to it, which I've found that there are so many people who want to talk about who God is, how they've been treated by the church, why they don't believe in God, which is just, I love those conversations. And it's not me trying to persuade or convince them to believe a certain thing, but it has opened up my doubt, and my journey of deconstruction has opened up so much empathy for people who just, because for me, all of the doubts that I've experienced, it doesn't make sense that I'm still a believer today. It doesn't. And I'm like, yeah, on paper, all these doubts that I have, I should just walk away. Mm. But I can't, because I know that this love is real.
Right.
Like, I experience it every single day. I know it's real.
Yeah. The empathy that you're offering, and I maintain the love that you're sharing, is the way of Christ, right? And so, what a great testimony without any form of deliberate proselytizing. It's actually living. And that's what Jesus wants us to do, right?
Is just emulate. Get out there and love people.
Yeah.
Okay. Final takeaway. If there is one thing you want our listeners to walk away with about doubt and faith, what would that be?
I think it's simply that it's all right to have doubt in the midst of faith, and it's all right to ask questions. I think I want people to feel that that's a good thing and it can be used for their betterment.
Yeah, not just all right, healthy.
Yeah.
Healthy to experience that and to wrestle with that.
And yep.
It sounds to me like I've got a pastor sitting across the table from me that's willing to take on your doubts and your questions. And
come on.
Yeah. So send him an email. Give him a call. Yeah. Have this conversation. It's worth it.
There you go.
The Life Plus God podcast is hosted, written, and produced by me, Alyssa Robinson, and sponsored by Treach Memorial United Methodist Church in Flower Mound, Texas. If you live in the Flower Mound area, I invite you to stop by and see if Treach could be your new church family. You can learn more about all of our programs and events at tmumc.org, and I hope to catch you next week for our next episode of the Life Plus God podcast.